Good morning. Today's Daf and Ksuvos Yud Gimel. We are on the very top of Yud Gimel Med Aleph. We're starting with the Mishnah, Hiomeres. We are towards the end of the first parak of the Masechta. Here in the end of the first parak. So we're going over claim, counterclaim. They got married, and unfortunately, there is, in fact, a dispute between the two of them over a really fundamental issue, and that is that he expected her to be a Basula, and she wasn't a Basula. And so what is the result of that? So they're going to make, each one of them is going to be making claims in terms of what happened, what occurred. So this already started yesterday, the Mishnah on Yud Beis Amud Beis. So described where he married a woman. He didn't find her to be a Basula. So, and in the previous Mishnah, in yesterday's Daf, so she says that Misha Astanian and Nasti. So Rachmanis, I was violated while I was, while we were married, meaning during Kedushin. And Istab Chasadeu. And so it's both unfortunate for me, and it's also your unfortunate luck as well, meaning that that I'm not going to be losing any of the ksuva as a result of the fact that this happened while I was under your jurisdiction. And he says, no. He says, you're not telling me the truth, but rather what happened is that you had relations before Kedushin, you didn't tell me. Okay. So the so who do we believe? Do we believe him or do we believe her? Now, again, when I say who do we believe, so we, of course, don't know who to believe, meaning it's claims. It's a claim. It's a counterclaim. And neither of them are bringing actual physical evidence. Each one, obviously, is manufacturing a claim. I say manufacture. In other words, I'm assuming that they obviously both can't be right. So, and one of them probably is right. But, okay, in other words, let me use a better word. Each one of them is advancing a claim. Ah, there we go. Each one of them is advancing a claim that obviously is going to serve their interest better. So when I say, and the Mishnah says, who do we believe? So it's not a question of really who do we believe, but in terms of the arguments, which argument is going to be a favorite argument, which one of them is going to be more upheld in a court of law? The argument over here is about money, meaning it's about the ksuva. So the so over in a little bit later on this morning, so we're going to move the discussion to discussing her status and whether or not she's a ksher lakuhuna, a psula lakuhuna. We're going to be talking about a baby. In other words, she got pregnant, and we'll be talking about the status of the baby as well. All that's coming up later on. But right now, as for right now, it's really just a financial debate over here in terms of how much ksuva she's entitled to. Did she forfeit any of her ksuva? Did she forfeit all of her ksuva? So these are really the discussions that are occurring right now. I know the language that we're going to be using, both in the Mishnah and the Gemara, is who do we believe? But that's not, we're ultimately, we don't know. It's just a question of, in terms of the arguments that are being advanced, which one of the arguments are going to be more sustainable in a Beis Din? That's the issue. We are on Yud Gimel Amud Aleph. We are continuing now. We are up to the next Mishnah. Okay, so now once again, they got married. She wasn't a basula, and so now in this Mishnah, so her claim is like this: mukadetz. Okay, in other words, there was an injury, I'm not entitled to lose. Well, in a moment, we're going to have to explain what does her claim mean from a dollar standpoint. Okay, so what you have to do is you have to remember the mission that we did previously. I'm going to come back to that in just a moment. And he says, no, you were with a man, meaning the fact that you lost your basulim is because you experienced a man. Now, in his claim, he's not saying it while they were married, because if he says that, so basically that's creating isser. And over here, this is not an isser discussion. This is a mamonos discussion, which means that in his claim, he's saying that you were with a man before Kedushin, and you didn't tell me that. Okay, and so therefore, it was a failure of disclosure on your part. So now, sorry, I got a little tongue twisted. Okay, so, and once again, the shitas are always going to be the same in the Mishnah. So that part is easy to remember. Rabbi Gamliel says that she's believed, and Rabbi Yeshua says, no, we're not going to be living by her word. Meaning, we don't know she's right, and we will assume she is, and we will not assume her position until she brings physical evidence to her to her argument. Okay, so what's the back and forth here in this Mishnah? So he's saying, well, let's start with her. She's saying mukadetz, meaning I did lose my virginity, but I lost it based on an accident. He's saying, no, you were with a man prior to Kedushin. Okay, now, how does all that translate into dollar figures? Meaning, what's her argument in terms of a dollar figure? What's his argument in terms of a dollar figure? Now, in order to appreciate the next Gemara, so we have to remind each other. So what is a Mukaretz entitled to? Meaning, let's say there was full disclosure she was Mukaretz. So how much is she entitled to? So that takes us back to Yud Aleph. That's 2 days ago in the Daf. So the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Aleph brings down a machlokas on this very issue. So according to Rabbi Meir, Mukaretz is going to get 200. According to the Chachamim, Mukaretz is going to get 100. So over here, even in her argument that she says she's a Mukaretz, so is this Mishnah subscribing to Rabbi Meir, or is this Mishnah subscribing to the Chachamim? Another question. In other words, and now when he comes back at her and he says, no, you were not Mukaretz, you were Drus Adish. So what's his counterclaim mean financially? Okay, so everyone begin to see the complexity over here now in just getting through this Mishnah, meaning we have to know who the where the starting point is on the claim. We have to now know where the counterclaim is taking us. Okay, so this part is of today is going to be a little bit complicated, but not much. It's not so bad. We just all have to remember the shittas that we saw a couple days ago. So ta'anasaihu b'mai. So what's the claims? What is she claiming? What is he claiming from a dollar standpoint? So Reb Yochanan, I'm Reb Masai Noman, Reb Lazar, I'm Reb Man of Elo Klum. So Reb Yochanan says 200, 100. Meaning her claim is saying that she should be awarded 200. Awarded, by the way, meaning her ksufa should stand. Her ksufa is at 200, it should remain 200. And his counterclaim is no, 100. And according to Reb Yochanan, and according to Reb Lazar, 100, 0. Now let's go over each one of them. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Masayim, Manas Avalek, Rabbi Meir, Damer, Ben Hikarba, Ben Lo Hikarba, Masayim. So, as far as Rabbi Yochanan is concerned, so he holds like Rabbi Meir, which means that a Mukaretz should get 200. And even in a case of non-disclosure, a Mukaretz is going to get 200. Rabbi Meir is of the position that Mukaretz is just simply an accident. And it wasn't through a man. And so therefore, she is, from a ksuva standpoint, as entitled to 200. As a basula is. Fine. So when she says Mukaretz ani, her claim now means that I'm really entitled to 200. And when he comes back and he says no Drus Adishat, so that means that his counterclaim is reducing it from 200 down to 100. That is according to Rav Yochanan. Rav Elazar, Rabbi Manav Alo Klum, Savalaka Rabban Adam, Rebain Hikarba, Belo Nikarba, Mana. And according to Rav Elazar, no. Her claim means that, look, I understand there is going to be a reduction in my ksuva, but in other words, I'm still entitled to 100, and his counterclaim is 0. Now, the Gemara goes on to explain, why are Rav Yochanan and Rav Lazar taking different viewpoints of our Mishnah? Bisham ala Rav Lazar lo kamer k'Rav Yochanan dekamuk la k'Rabbanan. Now, as far as Rav Lazar is concerned, he's saying over our Mishnah, it's preferable, it's a better way to say our Mishnah. Why? Because he's putting our Mishnah like the shita of the Chachamim. Meaning, imagine, if you had to choose between which shita is the upheld shita, which is probably the more halachically accepted position, Rav Meir or the Chachamim? It's a no-brainer. The Chachamim. Rav Meir is a das yachid, he's a shita's yachid. So therefore, I have our Mishnah over here, and I have to frame the Mishnah. It's much easier to frame the Mishnah like the Chachamim. That's the accepted shita. So from Rav Elazar's standpoint, that's exactly what we did. Meaning, so Mukaretz, according to the Chachamim, is 100. So her claim is 100. Obviously, his counterclaim, well, it's obviously, in other words, he's trying. It's gonna have to come down from there. So it'll be 0. His counterclaim is 0. Okay. And in a moment, we're gonna explain why the counterclaim is 0. But that's the shita of Rav Elazar. Ella Rav Yochanan, my time alone. I'm a Rav Elazar. But what I don't understand is that, why is it that according to Rav Yochanan, why doesn't he say our Mishnah like Rav Elazar? I mean, Rav Yochanan is saying that our Mishnah is going like the Shita Rav Meir. The correct framing of our Mishnah is Rav Meir. Why would he do that? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. So, because this goes back to a debate that we had both 2 days ago and in yesterday's daf. Okay, what happens when she failed to report? Meaning, so she got married, she knows she was a ba'ula, and she didn't tell him. And so now, lo and behold, after they got married, he married her with the assumption she was a ba'ula. She only fed that assumption, going into the marriage, and then afterwards he discovers she wasn't a basula. Okay, fine. So now obviously repercussions. How much repercussions? So you remember, this we deliberated in yesterday's daf and 2 days ago as well. So on one hand, one could argue, mekach taos, meaning you didn't disclose. You should have told me, you didn't tell me. So that's mekach taos. Therefore, full forfeiture. That's one position. The other position we saw, this is amongst the Amoraim. The other position is no, not full forfeiture. In other words, it's just a reduction from 200 to 100, but not a full forfeiture. Good. So this was debated. It happens to be that Rav Yochanan's of the position that it's not a full forfeiture, but rather a reduction from 200 to 100. Ah, that's Rav Yochanan's position. So therefore, when Rav Yochanan goes into our Mishnah, so in other words, he can't have her counterclaim be zero. He can't have his counterclaim be zero because he happens to be of the opinion that in a failure of disclosure, it's not a full forfeiture. That's why now Rav Yochanan, he knows where he's going to end. He's going to end where the counterclaim is going to be 100. Ah, so if the counterclaim is 100, so what's the original claim? It can't be 100 because then it's ridiculous. What kind of debate is this, right? Your ksuva should be 100. And she's coming back at him and she's saying, my ksuva should be 100. Oh, okay, fine. Good. We can all go home now. So in other words, it must be that her advanced claim is that I'm entitled to 200. His counterclaim is 100. Okay, so, right, everyone understand the horse that's pushing the cart over here is that Rav Yochanan's of the position that failure to disclose does not result in a full forfeiture of Iksuva. Now we work backwards. Now that we know that the counterclaim is to get to 100, so the original claim has to exceed 100. Okay, that's why he frames the Mishnah as Rav Meir. I told you, this part's a little bit complicated, but once you see it, it's good. So the Vinim says, "Bu yishlo ksuva mana." So I'm going to read that again. So Bishlam the Rebbe Lazar. I'm backing up two lines. Bishlam the Rebbe Lazar lo kamak Rav Yochanan deka mukala karabanan. El Rav Yochanan my tam lo amak Rebbe Lazar. Why is Rav Yochanan hold like Rebbe Lazar? Because of a concept of cheskes pesul. Vinim says, "Bu yishlo ksuva mana." Ah, because he's of the position that a failure of disclosure still entitles her to 100. So hachu kamra mana vehi kamra mana. And now what? And now his claim is 100, her counterclaim is 100, and that's, of course, absurd. So, my ika bein taina dideh la taina didah. They're making the same taina. Obviously, in our Mishnah, we have an impasse. They're not obviously agreeing to the amount. Okay, so that's why Rav Yochanan has to frame our Mishnah like Rav Meir, so that the original claim, her claim now, is that I'm entitled to 200, and his counterclaim is, no, not 200, but rather 100. Now, Bisham of the Rav Elazar Haina Diktani Tarte. So now, according to Rav Elazar, I understand why there are two Mishnayos, meaning this Mishnah and the previous Mishnah. In the previous Mishnah, it was very similar to in the previous Mishnah, where he didn't find her to be a Basulim. In the previous Mishnah, so what were the claims, counterclaims? So she says, I was violated after Kedushin. So, but it really comes out to the same point. Meaning, it's true in the previous Mishnah that she wasn't a Basula, and she has now a rational explanation in terms of why. In our Mishnah, it's the same thing. It's just she's giving now a rational explanation in terms of why she wasn't a Basula. Previous Mishnah, so I was violated after Kedushin. In this Mishnah, Mukadates, but basically it comes out to be the same point. So according to Rav Elazar Bishlam, the Rav Elazar Haina Diktani Tarte, Chadala Fuke Midrami Merchama, Vechadala Fuke Midrav Chia Bar Avin. So now they both are rejecting shitas that we saw over the course of yesterday's daf and 2 days ago. Meaning that what happens now in a case of a failure to disclose? So in a case of failure to disclose, so again, we saw shitas that say she doesn't forfeit her full amount. But the but Rav Elazar's of the position, she does forfeit. And I need not one, but two Mishnayos to make sure that, to hammer this point home. So, Midrav Chia Bar Avin, I'm Rav Sheshes. Ela Rav Yochanan, Tarti Lamali, but according to Rav Yochanan, so why do I need two Mishnayos? Meaning again, Rav Yochanan's of the position that a failure of disclosure does not result in full forfeiture of Iksuva. And so, according to Rav Yochanan, now I need two Mishnayos to make that point. So, Chad Elodicha Kocha de Rabbi Gamliel, Chad Elodicha Kocha de Rabbi Yoshua. So the Gemara says, you know why I have two Mishnayos? I have two Mishnayos because each one of them accentuating, emphasizing the respective shitas of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. So, Kamaisa Elodicha Kocha de Rabbi Yoshua. The first Mishnah is really highlighting the Shita Rabbi Yeshua Davagav Dika Lamehmer Migu Lamehemna, because even though in the first Mishnah, so there's a Migu, meaning in the first Mishnah, what was her argument that she advanced? What was her claim? So I was violated. I was violated after Kedushin. Now the truth of the matter is that she could have made even a better claim. What would be the better claim? The better claim would be, is that, Mukaretz. So in the previous Mishnah, not only does she have a claim, but embedded in the claim is even a better claim, otherwise known as Migu. And still Rabbi Yoshua says, no, we don't believe her.
That doesn't negate the fact that she didn't tell
him
either way.
Okay, fine. But that's true, but that's not the point of the Mishnah. Meaning the Gemara deliberates whether or not a failure of disclosure and what that is going to mean. But as far as the Mishnah is concerned, the Mishnah is just simply going on whether or not she's going to be believed on what she's saying. So in the previous Mishnah, Rav Yeshua says, I don't believe her, even though she had, we're going to call this a super claim, right? A super claim meaning that there's a claim within a claim, meaning she made a claim, but she could have made even a better claim. So it's a super claim, and Rav Yeshua says, don't care, not interested, meaning her claim is not going to sustain. And Basraisa L'dicha Kocha D'Ram Gamliel D'Avagav D'Lekel Me'mer Migo Me'amna. And the second Mishnah, meaning our Mishnah, where she's giving the best possible argument that she can. So it's not a super claim, it's a claim. And yet, Rabbi Gamliel says, we're going to believe her. So that's why each Mishnah is really emphasizing and highlighting the respective positions of Rabbi Yeshua versus Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Yeshua doesn't believe her even when she makes a super claim. Rabbi Gamliel believes her even when she makes a regular claim. Okay, so that would be the need and the purpose of the two Mishnayos. Okay, so where are we right now? So we just concluded a series of two Mishnahs between yesterday and today in terms of what happens when discovery comes about that she wasn't the Basula, and now she advances a claim in terms of what happened. He counterclaims in terms of this is what I think happened. Again, I want to reiterate, we don't know, of course, who's right. In other words, each one is predicated on claims. Yesterday, we discussed the issue that she knows better than he does. Okay, but in other words, but she hasn't provided evidence to her claim. In other words, it's what's called the Tanis Bari. Good, we discussed that yesterday. And her Tanis Bari may be better than his Tanis Shema, meaning he doesn't know. But still, it comes out to claim and counterclaim. And now, on the we just concluded a series of Mishnayos where it's really, when we say, again, I know I said this earlier this morning, I'd like to reiterate, when we say we believe him, when we say we believe her, it's not a question of whose story we really believe because we really don't know. It's just a question of what do we do with the ksuva? How much is the amount going to be? Are we reducing the ksuva? Are we not reducing the ksuva? Okay. If we're going to favor her claim, we're not reducing the ksuva. If we're favoring his claim, we are going to reduce the ksuva. Okay. And a big part of today's discussion is what is her claim in terms of what we should do with her ksuva? And that obviously will impact what the counterclaim is on his part in terms of reducing it from that point in time. We had a machlokas amarayim, Rav Elazar, Rav Yochanan, in terms of where do we start and where do we finish on claim, counterclaim. Okay. Next Mishnah. We're on Yigim Lamed Aleph. We are halfway down. And Ru Medaberes Im Echad. Okay, so now she's consorting with a man. Now, the language of the Mishnah is that she's talking to a man, but obviously over here, talking is not the issue. Right, conversation is great. Okay, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos says al tar b'sicha im ha'isha. Right, should not prolong conversations with a woman. Actually, the Mishnah over there says even your own wife. In other words, obviously, right, kava chomer. How much more so with other women? Good. Anyway, but the Mishnah over here is not talking about conversation. The Mishnah over here is talking about where she was now. In the Mishnah itself, she was acting inappropriately with another man. Now, the word medaberes leaves us open to interpretation. What does that mean? It means she secluded herself with another man. They saw her actually with another man, intimate with another man. Okay, so hold that thought because that's really important. And in just a moment, we're going to try to clarify. So Reuben debers yamachar v'amru la mativa shel yishu ish ploni v'kohen hu. Now, she says, everyone, don't worry. He was a kohen. Now, don't worry. Meaning, her behavior is inappropriate. That is not open for discussion. Okay? Highly inappropriate. In other words, it's not her husband. Okay? But, and she's not a married woman. Otherwise, we lead into many other very serious issues. What is the issue in our Mishnah? The issue in our Mishnah is the following. If she consorted and if she was intimate with a non-Jewish man, she now is psula. She's disqualified. She's a zona. She can't marry a kohen. And so basically now her status in terms of her marriage and eligibility of who she can marry is on the table. And so when she is with a man and we don't know who the man was and we now have to ask her who the man was, so now how much credibility does she have in terms of identifying who the man was? So, and everyone now knows where the positions are going to be taken. Because again, it's going to be the same. Okay. So Rabbi Gamliel says, okay, if she says the man was a Kohen, fine. Man was a Kohen. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, it doesn't matter what she says. Meaning she was with a man, wasn't her husband. And again, she's not a married woman. In other words, she was with a man. We don't know who the identity of that man is. We're going to have to assume the worst. And therefore, from this point going forward, she will be disqualified to marry a Kohen. She's a psula. Now, the second case here in the Mishnah is going to seem to be pretty similar. She was with a man. How do I know that? She was pregnant. Okay, so over here, so we don't have to entertain much in terms of, did she sleep with a man? Did she not sleep with a man? The pregnancy kind of gives it away. Right, we now know. In other words, so at that point in time, the guessing is over. She was with a man. That part's clear. Now the only question on the table is, who's dad? So Mish Pony Kohen who? So she says, I'll tell you who dad was. Dad was a Kohen. Okay, so again, she's not a married woman. The adultery is not the issue over here. The issue over here is just simply a positive identification of who fathered the child. Okay. So once again, we now know where everyone's going to be in terms of their positions. Rabban Gamliel, V'Rebbe Eliezer Armin Nehman, Rabbi Yeshua Armin Lomipi Anuchayim, Ella Hareze Becheses Mubaris Lensin Lamamzer, Chetavirai Lidvareha. So once again, Rabban Gamliel says she has credibility. And Rabbi Yeshua says she does not have credibility. And we're going to be assuming that not only is she Psula, but obviously the child now, being that the father of her is apostle, child is also going to be apostle as well. Okay. So, we have two cases in our Mishnah. One case is where she is, we're going to put this in quotes, talking to a man. The second case in the Mishnah, okay, she was with the man. Now, the case of talking to a man. So, again, as we already established, it wasn't conversation. Okay, fine. It wasn't conversation. What was it? So, so we have a machlokas amarayim in terms of what is the correct interpretation of our Mishnah. Ziri says that they were seclusion, and Ravasi says no. The witnesses actually saw that she was intimate with a man. Now Bishlam Ziri midaberes. Now a point for Ziri, the language of the Mishnah. Midaberes means conversation. Okay. I understand it's more than conversation, but in other words, we're going to assume that it means a little bit more than conversation, meaning she went alone with this man. So, Ella Ravasi, my midaberes. But according to Ravasi, who understands that midaberes means that she was with a man, meaning witnesses saw that she was with a man. So the word midaberes, why would the Mishnah choose that language? So the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Because we are dignified people. We're classy people. And when we talk, we try, even though we're talking about things that are unbecoming, unseemly, but as much as we can, we got to clean up our language. So, okay, she ate, she wiped her face, and She said I didn't do anything wrong. This is all euphemism, meaning the Navi, in this case, Ksuvim. But the Navi, even when speaking about things which are highly inappropriate, but still, the language is clean language. Okay, euphemism. So that's the same thing in our Mishnah, meaning the Adam saw her actually be with another man, but the Mishnah uses the words medaber. Fine. Okay, so that is a defense of Rav Asi. Next. Bishlam Liziri Hani Diktani Tartim Medaberes and Moberes. Now, according to Ziri, it's really good. Because there are two cases in our Mishnah. One, she was talking, that's in quotes. She was talking with another man. Two, she's pregnant. Okay, so in the second case, she was with another man. Again, that part's clear. So, and then what's the need of the first case of the Mishnah? The first case of the Mishnah is that nobody saw her with another man. They just saw her seclude herself with another man. So that's why there are two different cases in the Mishnah. But according to Rav Asi, so problem. Rav Asi tells us that the Midaberes of the first case of the Mishnah is the witnesses saw her with another man. The first case and the second case are identical. She was with another man. So Be'el Rav Asi Tartilamali, Chadalach Shabbat, Chadalach Shabibita. The Gemara says, I'll tell you why I need both cases in the Mishnah. Because in the first case of the Mishnah, yes, the Adam saw her with another man. Again, I keep using the word another. All right, I want to edit that. I want to strike that. Again, this is not adultery. This is just a question of identification of who that man was. So the witnesses saw that she was with a man. With a man, meaning intimately. And in the first case of the Mishnah, so her credibility is going to be vis-a-vis herself and her status. In the second case of the Mishnah where she was pregnant, so her credibility is now going to extend towards her, the child. Okay, so the Gemara says, good. So the Gemara says, do you know that this is going to be subject to a debate? This is the Amud Beis of today's daf. And a little bit later on this morning, so the Gemara is in fact going to be debating this very issue in terms of, even if you believe her vis-a-vis her, do you believe her vis-a-vis the child? That's open for debate. The Gemara says, that's great, it's open for debate. I'm happy. But Rav Asi, it happens to be that Rav Asi is of the position that according to Rabbi Gamliel, she's credible vis-a-vis herself, she's credible vis-a-vis the child. And therefore, now according to Rav Asi, it works out. Why are there two cases in the Mishnah? Especially when you consider that according to Rav Asi, the first case of the Mishnah is that witnesses saw her with another man. So then why repeat the second case in the Mishnah? Answer, according to Rav Asi, is because in the first case, her credibility is vis-a-vis yourself. In the second case, her credibility is vis-a-vis the child. So now, Rapapa asks Abai the following. Let's go back to the sheet of Ziri. What's middaberes? Nistara. She secluded herself with a man. V'am Rabbi Yoshua, lo mehemna. And Rabbi Yoshua says she's not going to be believed. So, let's now let's put the following two pieces of information together. Again, according to Ziri, the first case of the Mishnah, she was alone with another man. She went into a room with another man. That's what the witnesses saw. That's all the witnesses saw. Couple that now with the opinion of Rabbi Yoshua, which is, we have to assume that they had relations in that room. Then, according to Rabbi Yoshua, when she comes out of that room, she now, whatever she says, we're not going to believe her. Meaning, to the question of, who's the identity of that man? Meaning we don't know who it was. Who's the identity of that man? We're, according to Rabbi Yeshua, we will now assume the worst. Meaning, whoever that man was, disqualified her from ever marrying a Kohen again. Okay, so, fine, that's all. If I subscribe to Ziri, coupled with the sheet of Rabbi Yeshua. Now, you take those two pieces of information together. Gemara says, how is that going to fit with the sheet of Rav? What's the sheet of Rav? So let's say, man and woman seclude themselves together. They're not married, right? She's not a married woman. But in other words, but they're acting terribly immodest. And they seclude with one another. So what would Rav do? So what Rav would call the two of them into their office, and it wasn't going to be pleasant. He would give Malkus Mardus, meaning, this is not formal Malkus or violating an Isser in the Torah. But in other words, Malkus Mardus, just because they're acting highly inappropriately, right? This is not the way we behave. So he gives a Malkus. However, no Isser, meaning neither he or she becomes Asser. Well, he for sure no, she doesn't become a surah. Meaning, even though she was secluded with a man in a room, she does not become a surah. Okay, fine. That's the sheet of Rav. So the Gemara now wants to know, so that means now that the sheet of Rav Yeshua is not in alignment with Rav. Now, that, of course, could in fact be the conclusion. That wouldn't be the end of the world, but the Gemara would like to try to create alignment. So, Lema Deloka Rabbi Yeshua, Filotem Rabbi Yeshua, Mala Asabi Yochsin. So the Gemara says, no, Mala Asabi Yochsin. Meaning that the Gemara says it could be that Rav agrees with Rabbi Yeshua, and here's how it would work. Meaning, let's go back to the case where, of Rav. Rav said that if a woman secluded herself with a man, so we give them both Malkus, but it would not create Isser. Now, the way the Gemara is saying it over, actually, it's talking about a married woman. Ah. And what did she do? She went into a private room with another man. Okay, so to say the least, this is highly inappropriate behavior. Okay. However, as they came out, so Rav would do the following. Malkus, but in other words, not create Isser. Because again, there were no witnesses who actually saw the intimacy. And so, just because they secluded is not going to make her usher to her husband. That's the Shita of Rav. Can that be aligned with the Shita of Rav Yeshua? Sure. Because Rav Yeshua is not talking about a married woman. That we already established back in the Mishnah. Rav Yeshua is just simply talking about a woman who was miyachid, who secluded herself with a man. And now Rav Yeshua is saying that now we're not talking about her vis-a-vis her husband. She doesn't have a husband. We're talking about now yichus. And in terms of yichus, so we hear this time and again throughout Shas, male asub yuchsin. They were just simply more machmer when it comes to yichus. Meaning we want to keep the integrity of the pedigree as good as possible. And so therefore, if we have an opportunity, I'm saying this a little too generally, but if we have an opportunity to be machmer when it comes to yichus, so we'll be machmer. So mal asub yichsin. So that could be behind the sheet of Rabbi Yoshua, and therefore Rav could in fact agree to Rabbi Yoshua because Rav was talking about a married woman, Rabbi Yoshua was talking about a single woman, and her status vis-a-vis who she can and cannot marry. Okay. Meisvei. Okay, so where are we right now? So, our Mishnah talks about a woman secluding herself with a man. Rabbi Gamliel says she's believed. Rabbi Yeshua says she's not believed in terms of who that man was. Therefore, according to Rabbi Gamliel, she does not lose her status. She can marry whoever she wants. According to Rabbi Yeshua, she did in fact lose her status. She can marry whomever she wants. She cannot marry a Kohen because we're going to assume that she had relations with that man. Okay. Now, what did they see? So that's a machlokas amarayim. So according to Ze'iri, just saw seclusion. According to a Ravasi, no. They saw the actual intimacy. So now, Meisvei. The Gemara is going to challenge. We're on the very bottom of Yigimel Amad Aleph. Re'usha nichnasa im echad l'seiser. So they saw seclusion. Ola chorva. Or they went to Vegas. Now, I know chorva is not Vegas, but okay, just it's not a terrible way to say it. So ola chorva. So and again they ask her, who was the man, and she says perfectly fine, meaning somebody who does not disqualify me. So okay, so once again, Rabbi Gamliel says we're going to believe her, and Rabbi Yeshua says we're not. Now, why are we bringing down this Brisa? Because at the beginning of the Brisa, it says, what happened? So in the very beginning of the Brisa, they either went l'seiser, sounds like yichud, o l'chorva. Okay, now, bishlama l'Rav Asi, sorry, let's do that correctly. Bishlama l'ziiri haini diktani tarta, l'seiser l'chorva. Ah, so according to Ziiri, perfect. Remember, Ze'iri said, what's the correct pshat in our Mishnah? Medaberis is istira, seclusion, yichud. And even though it's just yichud, when I say just yichud, that was highly inappropriate. But the witnesses did not see the actual bia. And yet, according to Rav Yeshua, she will be disqualified. this Braisa seems to be fully supportive of that pshat. Why? Because the Braisa says, L'seser o l'chorva. Seser, seclusion. What's chorva? More than seclusion. That's why the Braisa fits in with the Ziri. Ella Ravasi Dharma Nivalti Nivala Tarti Lamali. But according to Ravasi, where her status is only going to be open for debate when they actually saw the Bia, so how did you understand Pshat in our Mishnah? So the Gemara says, Chari Ketani, L'seis Techorva. So the Gemara says, well, the Braisa we just learned together. So the way to correctly understand the Braisa is Seser Dichorva. It's not two different cases. They went into seclusion, in specifically in a chorva. A chorva is basically a place of ill repute where everybody knows why exactly they're going there. So Vahala Seser O Lechorva Ketani. Yeah, but that's not the wording of the Braisa. So Chadal Chorva Damasa V'Chadal Chorva D'Dabra. So the Gemara says, well, in other words, no, they went to the chorva. In other words, again, a house of ill repute. So, and just a question now of, where is this house of ill repute? So it's Tzricha Diash Min Chorva Damasa V'Hakamach Sh'Ramen Gamlel Mishum D'Rav Kshir Metzlah. So is the house of ill repute in a Jewish community? I know that sounds funny, right? That's a funny sentence. But if it's found where most of the people that are populating are Jewish, so then you could make the argument that, look, she was definitely with a man. But at least we can make the argument, we could try to make the argument that, the man was most probably a Jewish man, somebody who does not disqualify her. But if it's Chorba D'Dabra, where most people are in fact disqualified vis-a-vis her, so would disqualify her, so then maybe Rabbi Gamliel would agree to Rabbi Yeshua. And flip it, meaning if I only had the Chorva where most people there are populating it are people who would disqualify her, so then maybe Rabbi Gamliel would agree to Rabbi Yeshua. Tzricha. That's why we need both cases. So in defense of Ravasi, right, the case of the Braisa is not just Yichud. But in other words, they went to a house of ill repute. Everybody knows that the reason why you're going into that place is to consort with a man, or for that matter, if it's a man, to consort with a woman. Everybody knows that. And now it's just a question of who it was, and we don't know, and do we believe her? And the machlokas of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Okay, that's all in defense of Ravasi, Meisvei. Okay, so everyone understand what we're litigating now is the following. We know our Mishnah. Our Mishnah brings down a machlokas Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Gamliel says she's believed. Rabbi Yeshua says she's not believed. What we don't know, or what is unclear and subject to a debate amongst the Amoraim, is what exactly were the circumstances. So if the witnesses saw that she was intimate with a man, not end of story, but that's clear. Meaning Rabbi Gamliel will tell you that she's believed, and Rabbi Yeshua says she's not, but meaning we know in that scenario. What we don't know is, what if the witness didn't see the intimacy, but all they saw was seclusion? Are we debating that case as well? That part's not clear. Why is it not clear? Because the Mishnah used the words midaberet. And because it's such an ambiguous term, so we don't know. Is that a reference to seclusion? Or is that a euphemism for intimacy? So we don't know. When I say we don't know, the Amoraim are debating this very issue. And so now, here we go now with round, I think this is the third round, of bringing in a Braisa, seeing which position is more defensible. It could mean that, but that's not on the table. It's not on the table. So Meisvei, so Zu Eidesha Isha K'shera, love Rabbi Yeshua Amar, Eino Nemenis. So here again, in this Braisa, it's basically going to be the same back and forth. But obviously the formatting of this braisa is a little bit different than what we saw earlier. And so what we're going to do is that we're going to look at the formatting of this braisa. Maybe this braisa can inform us in terms of who's saying a better pshat. Is Ze'iri saying a better pshat, or is Ravasi saying a better pshat? So, Zuei Desha Yishak Sheira Lav Rabbi Yeshua Amrein and Amen Asam Alem Rabbi Yeshua Itam Odim Shvui Shanishbeis V'yesh La'idim Shanishbeis V'yomer Tara Ani Shein and Amenas. And so here in the braisa, Rabbi Yeshua says, come on. A woman was taken to captivity, right, and held captive by non-Jews. Okay, so Rabbi Gamliel, are you ready to argue that case? Meaning she comes down and she says nothing happened. So what would you say over there? So Rabbi Gamliel's Amru Lo, they say. Meaning because it's not just Rabbi Gamliel, it's Rabbi Gamliel together with Rabbi Eliezer. So Amru Lo Aval. Aval over here means, of course we're going to concede to that point. You're right. She's held captive by non-Jews. We're not arguing with you on that case over there. Aval. Okay, but there's an obvious difference. Over there in the case of captivity, there are witnesses. The word witnesses over there is not to be taken literally. Witnesses just simply mean that it's self-evident, right? It's a anansahadi type of witnesses, meaning unfortunately, we know. A woman is being held captive by non-Jews, right? It's unfortunate, but we know what happened over there. As opposed to, if over here, we don't know what happened. Right, you hear that? Right, okay, anyway, I don't want to give it away, but right, but if you're listening carefully, you can hear this braisa sounding a little bit more like one or more over the other. We'll come back to that. So Amar lahem af lezu yesh edim shar kreitz ben shina. Now, Rabbi Yoshua says, what do you mean we don't know what happened over here? Meaning not the case of captivity. The case where she was secluding herself with a man. What do you mean we don't know what happened over here? Right? Newsflash. She's pregnant. We know what happened. So the Amru lo robo of the kochavim prutzim bar raizim. And they say, no, the majority of non-Jews are prutzim bar raiz. Meaning that in the case of the captivity, so that's unfortunately how they behave. So I'm Lehemin Apotropos Arayos. Counter argument, over here, she's pregnant in our case, and we don't know who the father is, and there's simply no guarantee in terms of who the father is. So Bamed Vamamorim Beidus Isha Begufa. Aval Isha Bibita, Devrako Avlat Shitsuke. Now this back and forth between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua is only vis-a-vis her status. But as far as the status of the child is concerned, nope, not credible. Ad kan divrei habraisa, that's the end of the braisa. Now, my ka'amar lehu umay ka'mahadrele. A little bit more clarity about what exactly the back and forth was in the braisa. Hachi ka'amar le. So this is how it went. Hashiv tani al hama uberes matishivein al amedaberes. So, meaning if the woman was pregnant, fine. But what if it was just occlusion? So I'm Lehem Daberes Hanu Shvuya, and Rabbi Yeshua's response is, what do you mean seclusion? How is it different than captivity? I'm Lo Shani Shvuya Derov of Dikochem Prutzim by Raya same. Captivity again, she's being held captive by non-Jews. Unfortunately, we know how they're going to behave. So I'm Lehem Hanami Kevin Diistater Ain Apachapas Arayus. Counter argument. In other words, even if we're not talking about captivity, but we're talking about seclusion. Again, Yetzer Hara for this is really strong. And she secluded herself with a man, and we don't know who the identity of the man is. This is Rav Yeshua arguing. We know what happened in that room. And now it's just simply a question of what the status of her is. No way to say for sure. Okay, anyway. We now have a Braisa. And not only do we have a Braisa, we clarified the Braisa. After all said and done, Ketanimiyas Tarti Medaberes Umubaris. So now, in the Braisa, as we just got done explaining the braisa, so they were litigating both a case of seclusion and they were litigating a case of pregnancy, meaning they were intimate with one another. Tiyufta de Ravasi Tiyufta. So now this is going to be a refutation of the Shita Ravasi, meaning that included in the debate of Rabbi Shura and Gamliel is even where she just simply secluded herself with a man. And now to the question of who that man was. So, in other words, A, we will assume that they had relations there. B, we will, according to Rabbi Yeshua, not give her the credibility to identify who the man was. According to Rabbi Gamliel, we do give her the credibility. But in other words, their debate is even in a case of stira, even the case of seclusion. So the Gemara says, a distinction, can we make a distinction in terms of who the population was that was surrounding her? So Mesayla Rav Yeshua Malevi, Dam Rav Yeshua Malevi, Ledivra Machsha Machsha Afila, Barov Psulim, Ledivra Apostle, Afila Barov Cherim. So the, and the Gemara says, okay, and so what we have over here is a support for Rav Yeshua Malevi. Because Rav Yeshua Malevi says, I do not care vis-a-vis what the general population is that around. Meaning, can we say that let statistics dictate who the man may have been? Meaning, can statistics help us with identifying who the man was? Rav Yeshua Ben Levi says, no, we cannot. And probably, meaning, again, the Gemara doesn't say this, but I think that part of the reason why is that since her behavior is so improper and inappropriate, that she's secluding herself with a man that's not her husband. Again, we're not talking about a married woman, but still, her behavior is so inappropriate that what Rav Yeshua Ben Levi says is that, look, even if the majority of the people that are around are kosher, but that's improper, inappropriate behavior, we're going to unfortunately assume the worst. Again, according to Rabbi Yeshua. Okay.
Isn't there a big difference between the cases of bringing in the captivity because she would be forced in that case?
Yeah. Correct. 100%. That's exactly what Rabbi Gamliel argues with Rabbi Yeshua. That's right. And Rabbi Yeshua will tell you, ein apotropos arayus, meaning once we're talking about where she's engaging in inappropriate behavior, so at that point in time, she has no credibility. Again, it's a back and forth, meaning Rabbi Gamliel will argue she's believed, Rabbi Yeshua will argue that she's not believed, and so even in the case where it's not captivity. Okay.
No, but Rabbi Yeshua argued that even in captivity, she's not believed.
In captivity, there's no argument. In captivity, there's agreement. She was violated by one of the men. The point, of course, is that now she can't marry a Cohen. There's no argument on that case over there. The argument is that where she on her own willingly goes and secludes herself with a man. Now identifying who the man was. Okay, so here we are on the debate. Okay, so I'm Rav Yochanan. Okay, so we're almost done with today's daf. Okay, good. Where are we? So it can be confusing the back and forth over here. Let's take a moment. Let's pause. Let's quickly recap. She's with a man. Now, when I say with a man, so let's go with the Gemara's conclusion, meaning there's a long discussion on this. It almost covered the entire Amud, but when we say with a man, we mean even she secluded herself with a man, right? In other words, we're siding with the we're siding with the interpretation we're siding with the interpretation of Ze'iri, okay? And that on in her behavior, even just secluding herself with a man, so we are now going to assume that she was with that man. Okay, again, not a married woman. This is not a question of adultery. This is now just a question of positive identification of who the man was, and where do we land on all this? So we have a debate between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua whether she herself is extended the credibility to positively identify who that man was. Rabbi Gamliel says she can. Rabbi Yeshua says she cannot. And their debate even extends to the case where we know that they were intimate with one another. Why? She came out pregnant. Even in that case, so Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua are going to be debating whether or not she's given that kind of credibility. Okay, and as we'll see, I mean the halach is going to follow like the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel, but nevertheless, it doesn't obviously. All right, let's make an obvious point. It doesn't condone that behavior at all. It just simply means that post that behavior, Rabbi Gamliel will tell us that if, in fact, the man that she's identifying as being a kosher will assume that she is telling the truth, and therefore, she, as far as her status is concerned, she did not marry apostle. Sorry. She didn't sleep with apostle. Therefore, she can marry a Cohen subsequently. Okay. That's the shita of Rabbi Gamliel. Okay. That's so far where we're concluding. One more point to litigate in today's daf. And that is, okay, so she secluded herself with a man. Alternatively, she was pregnant. She wasn't pregnant by the man. We don't know who the identity of the man is. According to Rabbi Gamliel, she's extended credibility. She can identify who the man was. What's left for discussion is, in the case of pregnancy, she has now a baby. Can her credibility to identify who the man was, can that not only extend to herself, but can extend to her baby as well? Now, hopefully you're thinking to yourself, well, of course. meaning her baby is a derivative of her. If she is a kshera, shouldn't the baby also be a kosher? Right? Hopefully, that's what you're thinking. I'm Rav Yochanan. So that's exactly the shita of Rav Yochanan. Rav Elazar Amar L'divrei HaMachshir B'Posa B'Bita. And Rav Elazar says, no. Even Rabbi Gamliel, who says that she's credible vis-a-vis herself, but will not be credible vis-a-vis the baby. Now, Amar Rav Amaitam Ad Rav Elazar. So, we need an explanation for Rav Elazar. We don't need an explanation for Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan's pretty easy to explain. If her credibility helps her, for sure it's going to help her fetus as well, and the subsequent baby. That makes sense. What is behind the sheet of Rav Elazar? The Gemara goes on to explain. Because what is behind the sheet of Rav Gamliel? Why, according to Rav Gamliel, is in fact she's believed? So what Rav Elazar is telling is going to argue is that her credibility is bolstered by the fact that she has what's called a chazaka. Prior to this to this event, she was a kshera, and so now, yes, her behavior was improper, inappropriate, highly inappropriate. But she started off with a cheskes kashrus, and now she is telling us that the man that she was with was a kasher. Okay, so her claim, coupled together, bolstered by also her chazaka, that's going to give her credibility. But that baby that came into this world, how was that baby born? With a cheskes kashrus? No. The baby was not born with a cheskes kashrus. The baby was born with questions and suspicions about who the father was. So oddly enough, because the baby is not born with a cheskes kashrus, therefore her credibility is not going to help the baby. So now we go back to the brisa that we saw about 10 minutes ago. And Rav Elazar says to Rav Yochanan, right, did you read the end of the brisa? The end of the brisa is saying exactly what I'm saying. That even according to Rabbi Gamliel, who says that she's credible vis-a-vis her, is not going to be credible vis-a-vis the child. Okay, so Rav Elazar says to Rav Yochanan, I don't know what you're looking at. I'm looking at the brisa. It's saying what I'm saying. So my love, Shtuki apostle. So now, when we see the word shtuki, so we saw that term used a couple of times in Yevamos. We're now seeing it being used in Ksuvos. We will be seeing it again in Kiddushin. Shtuki is basically a child who is silent. Question, who's your father? Answer, I don't know. Or simply, no answer. Meaning that's generally speaking what we mean when we describe a shtuki. What's the status regarding Yichus? Well, unfortunately, because he can't identify who the father is, so now, as far as Yichus is concerned, the child is a puzzle. And his pool of who he can marry is going to be extraordinarily limited. Okay.
Is he a mamzer?
We don't know. We don't know. Meaning, Suffolk.
Suffolk mamzer.
Suffolk. Okay. So, so Rav Elazar says to Rav Yochanan,
you call it mamzer, you're actually challenging the mother's status also.
Not necessarily. In other words, the man himself could just simply be a mamzer.
Oh, I see. The father's
right.
A mamzer.
Right, father's a mamzer. Okay, so the So my love, shtuki upasol. Now that's a simple reading of the brisa, which again would support Rav Elazar. Now Gemara says low shtuki v'kasher. No, shtuki meaning we don't know who the father is and the child is kasher. The Gemara immediately reacts to that. What kind of suggestion is that? Umi ika shtuki kasher? Does such a thing exist? And the Gemara says, yeah, it exists. So it's a very limited case, but there is a case. Okay, so there's a collection of Kohanim, 10 Kohanim together. Okay, and unfortunately, so one of them, meaning we know who the candidates are, one of them impregnates a woman. Okay, it's a strange scenario. I admit it's a strange scenario. But one of the Kohanim impregnate a woman. So here's what this woman now knows. She now knows, it's terrible. In other words, she was at a party, all the men were Kohanim, one of them impregnated her, she doesn't know which one it was. Okay, we can add alcohol to the story. You understand. In other words, but at least she knows from the pool of candidates, who the entire pool was. Now, Is dad a kosher? Yes. Can she positively identify dad? No. Therefore what? Child is a shtuki? Not in the classic sense. But yes, the child is a shtuki. So Asar Kohen Imam de Mepir Shechem Mehem Oval Avla Shtuki Ma Shtuki Ilema Shema Shtik and also Min Nechse Aviv Pshita. So what does that mean? He's not going to get a Yerusha? Of course he's not going to get a Yerusha. Meaning that if we can't positively identify the father, even though we know from the candidates who the father may be, but obviously Amotzi Mechaver Ala Veraya. He's not getting Yerusha. But that part's so obvious, we knew that already. So Umi Yedinan Avu Amanu Elam Shemashtik and Osami Din Kohuna. Now hopefully you remember this because we did this back in Yevamos, but now we get to chazer this again. And that is that even though you're a Kohen, you know you're a Kohen, but if you cannot positively identify your father, you can't do the Avoda. Right? We saw this back in Yevamos. So the pasuk says, "Va'isolo lazara acharav bris kuna solam mishazara miyuchas acharav yasazeh Shane Zara Miyuchas Acharav." Okay. So in other words, so the way that we could understand the Braisa, and I admit that this is really a difficult pshat in the Braisa, but we could understand the Braisa. When the Braisa says that we're not going to believe her vis-a-vis her son, it means in this extraordinarily limited case. That's what we're not going to believe. Meaning that the son cannot be doing the Avoda. The son is a Kohen. We know that dad is a Kohen, but she can't positively identify who the father is, so they can't do the avoda. But in other words, but outside of that, what Rav Yochanan will tell you is that her credibility, meaning Rav Yochanan, within the sheet of Rabbi Gamliel, her credibility will help not only herself but will help with the child as well. The child now is not a pasul. The child would be a kosher. Okay, generally. All right, Ad Kan. That takes us to the end of today's daf. Okay, admittedly, it's not so difficult, but there's just a lot to keep straight in today's daf in order to really wrap our heads well around today's daf. Okay, quick summary of today. Number one, the Mishnah, you give Yud-Gimel Aleph, where, once again, she's not a Besula, and he discovers that, unfortunately, at the first night of marriage, and now they're in court. So here, similar to yesterday's daf, but the claims are a little bit different. In other words, in our Mishnah, at the beginning of today's daf, she says Mukadates, he says Drusus Ish. And so now, what exactly was her claim? What's his counterclaim? Okay, so that was a big part of today's daf. And question, why is the Mishnah over here at all being presented when basically it's a repetition of yesterday's Mishnah? We did that as well. What's the necessity of the two Mishnayos? Number one. Number two, she was with a man. Either secluding herself with a man or intimate with a man. Okay, and that what I just offered is the pshat of Ziri, and the Gemara favors that as the correct pshat of our Mishnah. So she both secluded herself with a man, or not both. Either secluded herself with a man or was actually with a man. And now we don't know who the man was, and we need her to positively identify the man was, so that she is not going to herself be disqualified to marry a Kohen, so that if in fact there's a pregnancy, the child is going to be a kosher. So who do we believe? Once again, Rabbi Gamliel says she's believed. Rabbi Yoshua says she's not believed. Okay, and the big part of today's discussion, when the Mishnah first says the words medaberes, was that seclusion or was that intimacy? That's a machlokes between Ziri and Ravasi. Most of today's daf litigated that very point, and the Gemara ended up favoring the position of Ziri, that midaberes means seclusion. Okay. Then of those two positions, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yeshua. So as we know, the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, where she is going to be given credibility. And the next thing that we litigate in today's daf is that is going to be credibility vis-a-vis her. What about credibility vis-a-vis the child? So the simple pshat would be she has both. She has credibility for both, according to Rabbi Gamliel. And that's the shita of Yochanan. And Rav Elazar will tell you no. She only has credibility vis-a-vis herself, but not regarding her child. What's the difference? She has cheskas kashrus. The child does not.